Okay, I've got Beef and Lamb New Zealand's Farmer Director Chairman here, James Parsons. It's coming up to the time of year where Beef and Lamb New Zealand do their farmer consultation for the coming year, lay out some plans. And recently Beef and Lamb New Zealand board and staff have been through a bit of a review of our strategy, our vision, our principles and things like that. So it's a good chance to update on those and talk about them. So look, welcome back, James. I know last year we got a pretty good response to the podcast. It's another way of getting out about. Just start, set the scene, I guess. What's the purpose of this? Why'd you refresh the strategy, and what are you wanting to do with talking, getting feedback from farmers over the next month or two?
Yeah, so it's been a few years since we've redone our strategy, Aaron, and I think it, you know, these days with change being so rapid, you need to reinvent yourself continually. But also, you know, so the operating environment has changed, but also we've probably developed more connections with farmers, and so we've got a stronger base there. And so now it's a time to re-look at ourselves and say, how do we springboard off that to sort of take that next leap? So consequently, we've redone our strategy and asking ourselves some really hard questions. One of the challenges we have at Beef and Lamb New Zealand, and I think this is consistent with any levy organisation, is that we end up being a catch-all for a lot of activity. Yep. And so when we've looked at ourselves and said, you know, as an organisation, we're incredibly busy, but how much impact are we really having? Mm. And so the big idea behind our strategy refresh is being clear about the things we really need to push on with, but also the ability to say no to some things that are good ideas, but they're not the things that we should be doing, because by doing those things, we're compromising some of those big rocks that we really need to deliver impact for farmers.
Good. So I might actually, yesterday you gave a bit of a presentation here to Farmer Council about your drafting gate. We might dig into that. But the first one is, it's to sum it all up, is always the vision. We've got a new vision for Beef and Lamb New Zealand. Do you want to go through that, what it means and what the key components are?
Yeah, so having something that's really consistent with the way we roll, you know, values as an organisation, but actually something that's consistent with farmers as well and what they want out of us. And because at the end of the day, we're just an extension of farmers. So our vision is about having profitable farmers, thriving farming communities valued by all New Zealanders. Now, if I break that down, profitability is really important, but there's something deeper to that. It's actually profitability then enables farming communities to thrive. And the reason we put in valued by all New Zealanders is that increasingly in the environment that we're seeing today, with the trust that the public have of farming in general, has been diminished. Now, we do a bit of survey work, and what we understand is that there's still a good sense of trust for sheep and beef farming, but it's not where it was, and we've got to be really careful that we don't erode that. So consequently, we've got a much bigger focus now on how we build public trust as well.
Good. And I'm going to dig into that. There's four key priorities under that, because rural people being rural people, they say that's a nice vision. Tell me the specifics. What does it mean? But one of the things you talked about yesterday, and you just actually touched on here, is it's for Beef and Lamb New Zealand, it's been easy for us to say yes to everything because we're that catch-all, but we need those drafting gates, to use that metaphor.
Yeah.
What's the sort of principles there to where we might have to say no, or if we say yes to something, we're going to have to drop something else?
Yeah, so we asked ourselves three key questions, really, and there's quite a lot of research behind these questions in terms of what builds a great organisation. So We looked at, firstly, what are we passionate about? Mm-hmm. And that was a good exercise. There's a lot of things that we are passionate about, but what's our why as an organisation? Mm-hmm. And when we drilled into that, what came through, and it's in our vision statement, is thriving farming communities. Mm-hmm. And so implicit in that is obviously farms need to be profitable for the local community to thrive.
Yep.
So, you know, that was really important to us. The second question was, what can we be best in the world at? And now there's a lot of things that we can be good at, we could be second best at, but what can we really be best at the world at? And so in the New Zealand context, we looked at the fact that we know farmers probably better than anyone else, sheep and beef farmers. Now, when I say that, that's across the country. There'll be different organisations or businesses that will have a real depth of knowledge about a group of farmers in their community. But across New Zealand, we've actually got the best knowledge. But not just what we have now, but what we have the ability to deliver. And so we said, you know what, that's something that we can be best in the world at. And but that in itself wasn't what we ended up landing as sort of our key concept. That was actually that we have the best insights on those farmers. And then also having taken those insights, and using them to be able to influence discussion, be it with government, influence the New Zealand public, and this is in a positive way, not a propaganda sort of mindset, how we can help shape discussions, regain the public trust that we need, but also understanding the farming operating environment, etc., that we might be able to provide insights to consumers or in the marketplace, right through to the market access work we do. Research and development, again, is another way where what we do is we just having the research and the development is no good until you turn it into an insight. But then an insight is a waste of time too, unless it actually influences some positive behaviour. And so that was the second area. What can we be best in the world at? So it was insights that influence, built on our deep understanding of farming communities and farmers. And then the third component was about profitability, basically, and said, and so that really boils down to profit per kilo. So understanding our cost of production, the price we receive for our products, and then the production. So when we put those three things together, we said, you know what, as a drafting gate, anything we do needs to be able to tick both all three of those criteria. So first of all, it needs to be about farming communities that thrive, thriving farming communities. And we need to have real discipline in the area that we will only do things that generate insights, that influence. So other things that are really nice and fluffy, but if they're not, but if they're not things that in the insight space that will drive influence, then that's probably not something we should be doing. Someone else should be doing that. And then if it's, you can have some things that might be about thriving farming communities, there might be great insights, but if they're not going to drive an increase in profitability in a sustainable way, then again, we shouldn't be doing it. So it's some quite clear disciplines, really, and we see that as absolutely core to then pushing on with things that we can really make an impact on.
Excellent. So there's quite a lot of detail. What I'm going to drill into is just a few highlights to sort of attack, but for people who want more information or more detail on some of the things you've talked about, what's happening? We're sending stuff out to them, or it's going to be online? What's the plan?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we're just sending out a mail out to all farmers, and that'll have a rundown of our priorities and our vision and a lot of the activities. We're also doing things like this podcast. We've got a video where I just talk through some of these key principles, and then Sam McIver, our chief executive, then breaks that down in more detail. Plus, we've got various general managers in the organisation talking about some of the things they're doing. And so, yeah, there's a host of ways that, that people can sort of pick up on what's going on. Plus, on top of that, directors are getting out at various beef and lamb events and just having an opportunity to catch up with local farmers there.
Good as gold. Now, watch this space. We'll include some links in the description for this podcast as well if you want to find out more information. So those four priorities, look, we'll start at the top, and this is sort of the obvious one, support farming excellence. Under that, there's a number of things, that a whole lot of actions and activity areas. I just want to pull out a couple. The first one in that, and it's always a biggie, I know, when I've been to farmer meetings in the past, a sector R&D strategy or a sector research strategy.
Sure.
Where are we at with that? What's the plan?
Yeah, so we're getting down to, so we've got the high-level stuff we just talked about. Now if we say, right, let's bring this alive and stop talking about big high-level concepts. Support farming excellence is really around the extension work we do and make sure we have real cut-through. But again, to your point, Aaron, is around the sector R&D strategy. Now again, if we look at the fact that we're operating in the insight space, we've had a lot of requests from other players in the sector who are saying, well, they want some real leadership from Beef and Lamb New Zealand in terms of the sheep and beef sector R&D space. And so what we're going through the process of now is having, through a series of workshops and focus groups, building what that sector strategy for the sheep and beef sector looks like. But again, coming back to our core strategy, is it's about doing that through insights.
So the other one, and I'm just, this isn't by any means everything that's under each of these priorities, but another one that struck me is beef and lamb genetics. So that's been running as a bit of a collaborative effort for a couple of years now. Where are we at with that? What's happening in the next couple of years?
Yeah, so beef and lamb genetics morphed out of activities that we had through OVITA and SIL, our genetic evaluation system, and the central progeny test. So that came together. What we did is we put those together, and then we did a bid to government through MB, where they came on board and funded over $3 million worth and matched that with some of our funding plus some other players. And that's because it's a government partnership fund program, we got 5 years of funding for that. We've got another year to run, just over a year to run. And so what we're looking at now is how do we kind of evolve on from that funding model that we had with government. We're just working up some strategies around that now.
Okay. And the other one, you actually just briefly referred to it, but it's a key point under the priorities, the extension upgrade. So what's some of the highlights or what's some of the key things happening there or planned to happen there?
Yeah, so in the extension space, the big investment that we've been doing on behalf of farmers is through the Redmet Profit Partnership. And so what's just about to be rolled out from the Redmet Profit Partnership, and so farmers are 64% shareholders in this just through Beef and Lamb alone. We've also got six meat companies and two banks involved, which government has then matched our collective contribution dollar for dollar. The Redmet Profit Partnership is just launching an action network program, which is really taking the learnings from the pilots that we've been doing over the last few years through the Redmet Profit Partnership around how do we do extension better. And so there's a host of farms with groups that will be set up focused around 7 to 9 farm businesses with a facilitator and then some funding support for those farmer groups to get up and running. So that's just been launched as we speak.
Yep. Now, and actually in the room beside us as we record this, the Farmer Council at the moment are going through a bit of a workshop with our MPP on those action networks, which are a really exciting piece of the puzzle, you know, small farmer groups working together, learning off each other, helping solve each other's problems, and that how that fits in and alongside all the other things we do in that extension space. The third one, or the other one that really caught my eye under this priority was the Future Farm Program. Mm. What are we talking about there, James?
Yeah, so that's a really exciting initiative where we're looking at, again, sort of in the insight space, understanding where almost the bottlenecks, or I call them choke points, Aaron, in terms of with our farm systems, where we just can't kind of get through it. So, for example, it might be we can produce, we might have no problems around fertility in our sheep, for example, but we're having a challenge with, be it, you know, triplets or the bringing those through and good survival rates. Or it might be that we hit a wall in terms of that early spring forage production. And so what are some of those bottlenecks that actually stop us kind of getting greater performance in our farm businesses? And so the Future Farm Program is really about looking at a farm system approach where we would basically understand what those bottlenecks are, but we would do we'd structure an environment where we have the researchers and others around us so we co-innovate and come up with some of the opportunities there. This is also looking at more digital tools. Because there's a lot of great technology out there, but where it often falls down is how it's integrated into the farm system. And that's the bit that we often fall short in. So Future Farms is really about integrating in these new technologies into a farm system approach.
Great. So second priority I want to pick up on is around government and public insight and engagement. So I guess this comes back to in the value statement about being valued by all New Zealanders. One of the key terms in there is a GIA, so around biosecurity and some others. What's a GIA?
Yeah, so GIA is Government Industry Agreement. And so there's been a discussion going on for quite a few years led by government through MPI around how do we be better ready for biosecurity incursions. And we've had a few recently, and MBOVIS is the one that's the latest one that's really top of mind for us. And so this is about built on an Australian model in terms of the way they do things. And it's basically where industry at the decision-making table before an event even happens around biosecurity readiness, but also when you get an incursion, there's a decision between government and industry in terms of how you deal with it. Now, the catch in all this is that government is saying that to be at the table, you need to pay. And so the reason there's been some quite ongoing discussions for many years on this is just working out, well, what's the size of the bill? So we've talked that through with government. We feel we're at a stage now where we're happy to endorse that to farmers, but it's about just ensuring where the liability sits. The government view is that unless you've got some money in, you're not actually really going to be participating. And they've also said for sectors that haven't signed up the GIA agreement, they will cost recover from those sectors if they have a biosecurity incursion. So look, there's a little bit of pressure on us to get on board, but when we look at the positives versus the negatives, we say, you know what, biosecurity is hugely important to us, and we always sort of think about the foot and mouth disease possibility, and God forbid that would ever happen, but if we need to be on the front foot about this stuff and ensure that we're working very closely with government. So we think it's a good opportunity, and as a sector we should get on board.
Good. So look, as I say, I keep repeating, I'm only picking some highlights out of these. This is by no means the whole thing. There's a lot more detail in the documents and online that you'll be able to find. But the third priority, just moving on to that, is enhancing our environmental position. One of the things that struck my eye in that one is a sector environment strategy. What's the plan there?
Yeah, so the enhancing environmental position is very much around trying to bring together a lot of the work. There's a flurry of activity in the environmental space, and it's important that we get some real coordination and some strategy there. So probably falls into two pots, Aaron. One is in the policy space. So how do we engage with the government at national level, but also with local government? And then there's the extension space, which is ensuring that farmers are picking up the tools that are available. And then probably a third one, to be fair, is probably going back to the research side, but actually ensure what are the tools that we need that we can start pulling through where there's gaps. So one of the things that I'm really passionate about is the fact that we need cost-effective farm-scale water monitoring. You know, as farmers, at the moment we're reliant on things like Overseer, which is an input-based model to tell us actually what our environmental footprint is. It's not actually measuring actuals. And so, you know, on my farm business, I'd love to have something that was reliable, that would give me a real-time indication of how water quality is going, and then to be able to see that trending through the year and actually beyond years, and then understand if that is actually some of my management practices are helping or hindering. And so those sorts of things are just some of the things that we need to weave in. But a bigger picture, the environmental strategy is really a sort of looking at the policy space, also the environment. The extension side.
Okay, so, and one of the other ones, and this ties in, I guess, with being valuable New Zealanders, but it's also for rural communities, is the authentic environment story. So it's quite an interesting choice of words. It's not just an environment story, but that it's authentic. What's the, can you expand on that a wee bit more?
Yeah, so the authentic environment story is, I think it's, we've got to be really careful that we're not too defensive with this stuff. And this is kind of looking at it through the lens of the public, right? So as farmers, we feel often a bit beaten up and pretty misunderstood. If you've just gone and fenced off 50 hectares of native bush and put into a QE2 trust, and then you read something in the paper saying that farmers are environmental vandals, etc., and you've actually gone and invested a truckload of your own time and energy plus some money, then you know, you feel pretty misunderstood. But at the same time, we need to know how to communicate that with the public, and so an authentic story is actually really exposing the values and the genuineness, the authenticity behind our farmers in terms of how we articulate that.
Good one. And the last priority, and look, this is the one that often is held up, I think, as the pot of gold. Well, this is the answer to all that. Unlocking market potential.
Yeah.
And there's two key things in there, that the NZ Farm Assurance Program, which plays a part of it, but the big one, I think people have heard a lot about waiting to hear, is the red meat sector story. Where are we at with that? What's the plans? What are we likely to see in the coming year?
Yep, so as a result of a big review we did around our market development program, we've restructured the team. We've got a whole host of, we've got a team of new people in there, and they've now just done a big trip globally looking at key markets, what are the opportunities, and a lot of that is actually around how do we build the red meat sector story, something that's unique to New Zealand and really kind of pitches on our point of difference. So they've come back with some really good insights. They're busy working it up, and this is in conjunction with the meat processor exporters plus NZTE, Trade and Enterprise, and so that's coming along really nicely. We've got, on the back of that, then we'll be looking at what we call market innovation. And that's a case of looking, identifying which key markets we then go into,
but
do that in conjunction with meat exporters.
So we're likely to see some concrete outcomes and formal strategies in the coming year from that work?
Yes, definitely. So it's one of those things, we want to do this well, but we want to be fast as well.
Yep.
And so this is always this tension there in between. We need to get the job done quickly, but we don't want to be half-baked on it either. So, look, I think as things progress, we'll certainly be coming out and talking to farmers about it. But it seems to be progressing really nicely.
And the team actually shared a bit with us yesterday, which I think we can sort of talk broadly and publicly about, was that A, there are certainly opportunities there.
Absolutely.
But also B, we may have great product and a great story, but in some markets our lunch is getting cut for us by some of our competitors.
Yeah, that's right. No, to be fair, credit to Australian friends across the ditch. They're investing significant funds in promotional activity in some key markets and getting to a position now where they have prominence over New Zealand products. Obviously there's markets like Europe where they don't do so much, but in the US and Asia, they certainly are gaining some real traction. And so, you know, if we want to be in the game, we need to up our game as well around how we tell our story. And like this, I'm not really into New Zealand displacing competitors' product. It's probably about just being true to who we are and our niche. And there's a market segment of consumers out there that absolutely buy into what we've got, but they just don't know about it. So we need to tell that story.
And it was interesting. I know yesterday the Farmer Council, Beef and Lamb New Zealand Farmer Council guys were pretty enthused by what they heard. There are those challenges and issues where we're not up to scratch, but the message seemed to be consistently that we're not just tilting at windmills here. There is some significant opportunities for New Zealand red meat.
Yeah, definitely. No, and that stuff is really exciting, actually. You'd think about, particularly we've seen a change in generations now in the US where it was always a difficult market for lamb. Well, actually, there's starting to be a real interest. Lamb's getting trendy in the US. So there's an example where we could actually do some stuff in a way that's it's about growing consumption of that category.
All right, look, that's a quick overview. As I said, there's a lot more opportunity to find out more detail online, etc. Bottom line, though, James, and this is always a big cost, you're going to suddenly put the levies up to pay for all this. What's the plan budget-wise for the coming year?
Yeah, so the plan, no levy increases this year, Aaron. Look, I do think, though, and this is something that you know we'd need to test with farmers, that if there's a real value proposition around the market development work, and we haven't got it to a position now yet, where we would be confident come out and say to farmers, we've got real confidence, you should invest more here. But if there is, I think that's something that farmers should be thinking about. That's something that we would come back through a formal vote through an AGM process. So it's not like we're just suddenly not going to put levies up. But, you know, majority of farmers felt there was real value there, we could put a good proposition up, then that's something we probably need to be having a discussion in about sort of 12 to 18 months.
Great. So, and again, in the materials you'll get, there is a forecast budget for the coming 2017-18 year if you want to see total expected expenditure and where it's going. But look, I might wrap this up, James. You've been chairman now for, it's actually quite a wee while, I think. When did you take over?
Yeah, over 3 years now.
Yeah, no, it's gone by. But we did this podcast last year, talked about what you were going to do. Look at the last year and what's achieved in Beef and Lamb. What's been the highlights for you as your role as chair?
Yeah, I think we've really upped our game in the environmental space. You know, we've got a much stronger team there. I think we've extracted quite a lot of things out of the extension pilots and the way of engaging with farmers through Red Meat Profit Partnership, and now sort of bringing that into Beef and Lamb New Zealand. And what's been really good is we've just had much greater engagement with farmers. So the numbers have gone up significantly in terms of farmers attending Beef and Lamb events. And I think the other one that's been really good is in the market development space, you know, with that team getting, you know, coming together, building some good collateral. And, you know, there's this perception out there that farmers and the meat industry just don't get on. We're always at each other. But I'd have to say the relationship with the Meat Industry Association and processor exporters is the best I've ever seen it in all my time on the board. So I think we've had some good positive gains there. And look, the other significant thing too, Aaron, is Sam McIver, our chief executive, is now just a bit over 12 months. And, you know, it always takes a little bit of time to bed in a new chief executive, but Sam slotted in really quickly. He's got his team working well, and I think there's, you know, the organisation's in good heart. We're really focused on delivering for farmers.
Good. Well, I actually went back and listened to the podcast from last year and a few then talked about what we said we were going to do, and you've actually just ticked off, I think, the key points. The other one, though, that we were talking this time last year and we went to farmers about was adding a independent director to the board too, which has been a significant... So tell us a bit about who's taken on that role, and I mean, she's new in the job, but how's that looking?
Yeah, that's right. No, thanks for bringing that up. So as a result of the governance review last year, that was one thing that was recommended from farmers, was we need to have an independent director on the board. So we've just appointed Melissa Clark Reynolds into the role. She just had her first board meeting this week with us, and it was real interest in the role. We had 60 applicants apply, and some very high caliber applicants too. It was a difficult choice. One of the things we were really after was a bit more diversity around the board. And Melissa's not only a woman, but she brings a completely different skill set from our farmer directors and two processor nominated directors. So, a lot of that's actually in the technology space, business startups, She's just got a completely different network from your conventional sort of beef and lamb director. And so that's great. You know, it just brings a completely, you know, a richness to the conversation around how we tackle these strategic discussions.
Good one. All right, yeah, and certainly if you want to engage with our independent director, those of you that are on social media are going to have no problems. I see she's fairly active there. So, hey, look, that's sort of 25-odd minutes, which we intended just as a bit of a snapshot. So thanks very much for your time, James, and your details are on the website as well. If people want to give you a call directly, they're most
welcome. Absolutely, always welcome.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you very much.
Cheers.